Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. True Wealth is a weekly program sponsored by Coins Plus. Coins Plus is a full-service precious metals broker-dealer located in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is committed to honesty and integrity in every transaction. Now here's the host of True Wealth, Kevin Wolter.
Hello again and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin Wolter, the host of True Wealth. True Wealth is a weekly radio program sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus is a full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer and depository service. We're always buying and selling all forms of precious metals, whether that means gold and silver bars, gold eagles, Krugerrands, maple leaves, pandas. We buy gold nuggets, placer gold out of the ground. We buy scrap gold jewelry. We buy good quality jewelry. We buy Rolex watches, Patek Philippe, things like that. We buy dental gold, and that's, I think they're still working with that a fair amount, but that's a lot better to have in your mouth than some of the stuff you guys are pretty familiar, I'm sure, with all the issues with mercury fillings they've put in the mouth. And you know, there's a lot of documented cases. For those of you who don't know, they call the filling amalgam. It's a mixture of mercury and some other stuff. They've done a lot of scientific documentation of just completely toxifying people with that. And it's good to have them removed. You can have either, they have white inert products that they can put in your mouth, or you can have it replaced with gold. One thing I don't get is why they use gold-colored gold in fillings and caps instead of white gold. That one stumps me. I think white gold looks a lot better than gold gold, unless you think people look good with great big gold teeth right in the middle front of their mouth. Maybe only on women. Just kidding. But it's important to understand we buy everything we sell for the most part. A lot of people know we sell stuff, especially those that listen to the show, but I get asked a lot if we buy the stuff or where they go to sell it. We make a two-way market on everything all the time, every day. And for your knowledge, anything we sell is so immediately liquid, it would blow your mind. It's more liquid than any paper investment you will ever have. I will admit that substantial portfolios that are well-balanced might take a little bit of time to go through, but nothing drastic. But your average sales, you know, even up to $100,000, it's a 5 or 10 minute process. I mean, if you have a small amount, if you have, say, a few gold eagles or 10 gold eagles and 100 ounces of silver, that's literally minutes. It's nothing like when I was in the banking world. I mean, it was nothing for people to wait around for months to get funded on various forms of investments. Even now, helping people cash out 401ks and IRAs or to roll them over or roll them out. A lot of you that are listening know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, it's a process sometimes. Sometimes it's smoother than others. Some of these companies have the attitude that they will only liquidate monthly or quarterly is even more common. Probably our worst experiences with liquidation, I mean, there's been a number, but Fidelity Mutual Funds seems to be one of the more arrogant, hard-to-work-with companies. They have a lot of internal policies that are severely in their financial favor. And what you have to think of, one thing is a side note. If you cash out a 401k or IRA, obviously, there will be tax consequences at some level depending upon your age and how much you've got in and what your other income is for the year. However, the tax consequences are yours and yours alone. A lot of these companies will try to tell you that they have to withhold 20%. This is not the case. Fidelity is probably one of the greatest abusers I've seen of this, where they will fight people tooth and nail to give them their money. The reason you got to understand is these companies deal in huge dollar amounts, literally billions. And if they can sit on people's money for just an average of a month or two, I mean, if you could get the interest, and by the way, Fidelity obviously gets higher rates of interest than you or I would on our money. But if they can get a few months' interest on $10 billion. And a lot of these companies are handling a lot more than that. They're handling hundreds of billions. But even if you get a few months' interest on $100 billion or $10 billion or whatever, it's a lot of money. On $10 billion, it's $100 million. On $100 billion, it's a billion. I mean, and they literally make this, you know, at 1% or whatever. But they literally make that kind of interest, and that's why they work so hard to do it. Unfortunately, the internal employees themselves have nothing vested in the process. They just have rules and regulations to follow, and that's all they do. So the bottom line is, compared to any of these things, it's a lot easier to liquidate. The other thing we're hearing more and more of is people trying to cash out different bank accounts, getting exposed to all kinds of IRS forms and all kinds of reporting issues and, you know, cash being treated, you know, having to give explanations for why they want to take cash out of their bank. The bank's excuse is because they want to make sure their customers aren't being subject to fraud, so they are making people tell them why they're cashing their bank accounts out or taking out substantial amounts of money, or if they're making deposits, why they're making big deposits. These are all advantages, obviously, of owning tangible assets. You have to have a certain amount of liquid cash available, and so you got to have money in the bank. But if you've got stuff set aside, just that you're not planning on spending or something you'd consider to be a form of savings, owning tangible assets, you know, physical precious metals or numismatic items makes all the sense in the world. And I can tell you, well, on a side note, again, as far as investments go, folks, there is one of the greatest wives' tales in the financial world, or misnomers, is that that annuities are somehow this really safe, conservative investment that, you know, really has low risk and everything's fine and you can't lose your money. Folks, you need to understand, insurance companies sell annuities. They are not subject to any of the regular rules and regulations in sales that the stockbrokers are under the SEC. They can tell you whatever they want, and all that matters is what's signed. They use terms and vernacular like, you can't lose your money. The minute you buy an annuity, you've lost all your money. They own it. They hold it. They literally have title and deed to it. If you want it back, there is nothing harder and nothing more complex than trying to cash out an annuity. In addition to that, there's no other form of legitimate investment that charges a greater fee structure. I mean, there are, you know, private limited partnerships and different kinds of REITs and, you know, other scam investments that they'll fee you worse than that. But in general, for regularly encountered investment vehicles, annuities are the most brutal. The surrender fees are harsh. When you give them the money, it's theirs. You know, God help you if you get talked into annuitizing. That means that you've turned all your money over to them. It's like a pension. It means they own the money. They will dole you out a certain payment every month until you die. Sometimes there's a death benefit, and then after that's over, it's gone. For those of you who don't know what an actuary is, all of the mortality tables and calculations, statistics, whatever, are done by actuaries and insurance companies. When I got out of college, I was an actuary. That's what I studied for. That's what I became. Actuaries make sure, folks, insurance companies make money. That's their job. They calculate the statistics and make sure that there's plenty of profit left at the end of the day. And so you don't beat an insurance company on an annuity. You just don't do it. They beat you. An annuity, especially when it's annuitized, it's calculated to take as much money away and give you as little as possible. It's not like putting $100,000 into a mutual fund and then pulling it out later and hoping it grew or maybe it even shrunk. Annuities are a whole different cat. It's important to understand that the calculations are phenomenal, which, as a quick side note, is why it's so ridiculous for the Obama administration to be telling insurance companies how they should run their insurance policies and to call them crooks and all this. It's typical government bureaucracy sticking its nose where it doesn't belong, unless they're actually looking at it actuarially. But they've been asked about all that and they will not comment. It's all, you know, feel good stuff that's designed to make people feel great and vote for them. Unfortunately, there's a pretty strong amount of information out there contrary to it that's keeping people from going into the polls next round and voting liberal, Democrat, or progressive. So if insurance companies take your money into an annuity and they say, okay, here's the deal, we're going to take $100,000, and then they'll tell you something like, we're going to pay you 5% on your $100,000. We're going to pay you $5,000 a year on your $100,000 investment, which sounds great. And they'll say that we'll pay you $5,000 a year until you die. So say hypothetically you're, you know, 60 years old and your mortality is, say, 80 something. You know, 25 years, which, you know, if you go that far, you've beat all the odds anyway. And you think, well, that's reasonable. I'll get $5,000 a year for the next 25 years. That's $125,000. That's horrible. On a $100,000 investment, folks, you're not getting 5%, because what they're saying is they're going to deplete your entire principal over the next 25 years. And if you get $5,000 for 25 years, you're getting $125,000 on a $100,000 investment over a 25-year period of time. Well, they're drawing from the principal, and you're really only picking up $25,000 in interest fees over a 25-year period. That's not even 1%. I mean, and the reason is that principal sits there in their hands. And so you have to understand how to calculate it, that, you know, there's a different way to calculate that based on how much money is coming out of the actual principal investment. So without getting into a lot more detail, I just want you to understand annuities are bad. And the real bottom line out there, folks, you know, everybody wants an investment. They want to grow their money. They want this. They want that. Investors in rare coins and precious metals, frankly, are spoiled and a bit impatient, because the truth of the matter is when you look at the stock market over the last 20 years or whatever you want to do, there's a small window in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, where the dot-com craze really rose, really drove the market, okay? And what happened there was, under the Clinton administration, he started this Fannie Freddie mortgage subsidization and rule outline policies and procedures for mortgage lending that basically loosened it up beyond your wildest dreams and did everything to make sure everybody got a mortgage. This infused a ton of false fiat capital. They only print, you got to understand, under the Federal Reserve Act, the way our system works, money is only created as debt is ensued. The only way more money can be made is if it's out as debt, because the Fed wants to get paid back. They literally make money out of thin air, and then they loan it out, and they want to get paid back. It costs them nothing to make. Not only do they get back what costs them nothing, they get it back with interest. And so the Fannie Freddie program infused the market with a ton of capital. That drove markets up, and because our market looked good, in other words, because all this fresh capital's coming in, it made real estate go up because everybody could get a loan, and it also made stocks and bonds go up because people had home equity and they had money and they wanted to invest it. And when they think about investing, they think of the stock market. What really drove the market crazy was the appearance of prosperity brought in this massive insurgence for the first time in history of foreign money, just massive quantities of foreign money from overseas, obviously. And because of that, we had this huge infusion of cash capital, and this country was flush. At one point, they were saying, you know, there's this big surplus. The surplus was calculated based on the most extreme growth rates the stock market had ever experienced. They knew it was a false indicator, but it made President Clinton sound good. However, at that point in time, when all this foreign wealth was pouring into our markets, we could have eradicated our debt. But of course we didn't. We thought, well, this is so good, we're going to just keep pumping up higher and higher. Every time the market showed signs of weakness, rather than letting the market go down, and this ensued on through Bush, rather than let the market go down, they just continued to manipulate more and more and more, and they did legislation. They just did everything they could to keep the market propped up. And so that you had this continuous infusion of fiat capital going into this market, artificially propping it up. The market should have relaxed at times. It should have receded at times. It should have corrected. They would not allow it. They just kept pumping it up. And because of that, eventually we got to these mountainous levels so that when it did correct, it was pretty serious the way it corrected. The problem is, even though the market had corrected at that time and a couple times since, it never corrected appropriately for monetary inflation. The real definition of inflation is monetary inflation. It's an increase in the actual dollar supply. That means they're making more and more money and introducing it to the economy. It's truly, you have to think of our paper dollar literally as a monopoly money note. It's not worth anything other than what you and other people believe in faith that it's worth. When they created this system, the Federal Reserve Act, which was designed by John Maynard Keynes, a devout communist, when they created this system, they also implemented, at his technical recommendation, the COMEX, the Commodities Exchange. Because not only had precious metals proven themselves from the beginning of written human history and biblically, they were sound money prescribed by our founding fathers to keep this country solid. So they used the COMEX to basically trade metals on paper, and it's all manipulated deception. And so on one hand, you're like, you know, okay, we've seen severe manipulation over the last few years. We've seen all kinds of manipulation over the long haul. They artificially fixed the price of metals down forever. Of course, until 1971, they made it illegal to own gold bullion. And now, you know, of course, that's totally legal. You could, during that time, it's important to understand that during that period of time where they didn't want you to own gold bullion, and I say didn't want you to own, there's the term confiscation. I mean, technically, they wanted to buy it from you. And what they did was when gold was $20 an ounce, they confiscated about 80% of the known gold at the time. And then after our government had the gold in their hands, they increased the value of the gold from $20 a troy ounce to $35 a troy ounce. That had a double effect. That increased the value of the gold by 75%, making it easier for them to use that gold to pay back the Fed and trade them for more monopoly money and to pay off foreign debt. The gold that the Fed that the U.S. government has in Fort Knox, 6,500 metric tons, has been obligated twice, once to the Fed and once for foreign debt. So technically, we have no gold. So once they pulled all that gold in and they increased the price, they increased their value, their net worth, by 75%. It lowered the actual net worth of the American public by 37.5%, because that change in the price of gold also affected the value of gold, the gold notes that were still circulating around, and the Federal Reserve notes still had a gold clause on them. So they took almost 40% of the monetary wealth of the American people immediately at the drop of a hat one day and increase their net worth by 75%. That is not what our government is supposed to do. It's in a roundabout form, and they do the same now with the U.S. Mint and all their marketing and coin collectible coin creation. By the way, if you want to invest in coins, do not go to the U.S. Mint and buy brand new products, okay? The reason is they are priced far beyond what the secondary market will settle at. There was a period of time back in the 90s, late 90s, where a lot of the things you bought from the Mint would go up in value, But that was until they figured it out. And again, statisticians became involved. And they calculated and watched and did studies and surveys and took data analysis of what the products end up being valued at in the secondary market. And they ran algorithms based on, you know, the design of the coins, the type of coins, the interest factor, etc., and determine what that market price was going to be on that down the road, and integrated that into their sales price. So now, best case scenario, you'll break even over the long haul. Worst case and more realistic scenario is if you buy coins from the U.S. Mint to, quote, invest, you will lose money. So anyway, as I said, the Federal Reserve brought in the COMEX, Commodities Exchange. They're doing the same thing now with the U.S. Treasury, all these coins and collectibles they're selling. They're making, you know, literally billions a year, billions of dollars a year. It just came out this week that they're making this exorbitant profit on student loan debt. Now, what's even more unbelievable about this, folks, and I double-checked these numbers, our government will make $127 billion profit on student loan debt over the next decade. And apparently there's 37 million people with outstanding student loan debt, which is a lot. That's about 12.5% of the U.S. population. However, there's 37 million people that owe debt. There's $127 billion in profit to the government. That means that the government will make an average of about $4,000 for every student loan debtor in the U.S. And, you know, that's a lot. The government shouldn't be profiting like that. That's one thing I found that I do agree with Obama on, but not for the same reasons. He thinks profit on the student loans is wrong anyway. I disagree. Who would loan money with no guarantee of profit? They should slide that over to the private sector. The easier they make student loans to get, folks, the more it makes college prices go up, yet the more expensive colleges get. And of course, no one's going to like this comment, but they're making it easier and easier to get a degree. The curriculum is becoming easier. It's just becoming more philosophical, political, and religious attack agendas. And as they cheapen or make it easier to get a degree by borrowing the money, they also make it more expensive, so people end up owing more debt. The degree becomes more worthless because everybody can get one, because all they got when they're going to college, they get all the student loans they want, no matter who they are, how bad their credit is, what their history is like, what their aptitude is, what the likelihood of employment is, whatever. Anyone can do this now. Anyone. And they give you money to live on, and the students are learning nothing about hard work, the hard work and sacrifice that's required to succeed in the real world. So when they get out, they're unemployable and they owe our government money, and we, the taxpayer, end up paying for it and when they eat the debt. Now they have all these student loan forgiveness plans based on, you know, where you live, your demographic, your age, your family structure, all this stuff. The only problem that people are missing now that I read about is that when you get the student loans forgiven, it's issued to you as a tax or as income, and people owe taxes on the forgiveness, and they don't know this is coming. So what they do is they transfer the student loan debt over to IRS debt, which you cannot get out of. And, you know, of course, people are arguing whether that's right or wrong. That's another debate. I think it's kind of the exception to the rule. If a bank typically forgives a debt on a credit card or something, it's considered income because it was money that they got and never paid back, therefore it's income. On student loans, it's a little different because it's not like it really, there's not a lot of benefit to it. So the track that this is from was the fact that the government started the COMEX, and then I discussed the fact how the Treasury and all this makes profit as they manipulated the metals, and they still do. Student loan debt was a sidetrack. But the bottom line is, folks, they invented the COMEX with the Federal Reserve so they could manipulate the price of metals, make it less desirable. Otherwise, everybody was just going to say, you know what? You can keep your Federal Reserve notes. We'll keep using our precious metals because they accurately inflate with the value of the dollar. So hypothetically, the bottom line theory and philosophy and historical financial fact of precious metals is that whatever you can buy with some, say $1,000, whatever you can buy with $1,000 today, if you buy $1,000 worth of precious metals, that's what you should be able to buy with it later on down the road at any given point in time. Overall, that's accurate and has been accurate. However, with the long-term manipulation and suppression of the metals prices, what you can buy with them today ultimately down the road will go up a lot more than that, as we've seen over the last decade or so, 10, 12 years, whatever. Metals have gone up about, you know, even now with us down in a pretty heavy dip, you know, working our way at some new floors. Metals are still, you know, gold was at a low, average low, 275 to 300 forever. We're up, you know, 350%+ of that. Silver was down in the $4 to $5 range. We're up 325% of that. So that has that's with us at a bottom, and that's caused by real inflation. Right now it's a bottom. Having that in your portfolio makes a ton of sense. It's a good time to buy. We do IRA and 401k rollovers all the time. It's super simple, super fast. It's super easy. Trust me, it's a very simple process. But for money outside of these supposed tax shelter umbrellas, which, by the way, are a farce, folks, because ultimately you're going to pay all that tax and more. You're doing not, you're just deferring the inevitable, but it becomes amplified, both due to the progressive increase of income taxes that have been natural to this nation, with liberals screaming that, hey, tax rates were higher in the 50s and they were doing better economically than now. Well, the reason for that, folks, is because the higher tax brackets were way up there at the real high income. We look back and the 50% tax bracket was above $100,000. You know what $100,000 was in the 50s? $100,000 in the 50s was the equivalent of $5 million now. And money outside of that tax shelter umbrella should be in a more balanced portfolio. IRAs and 401ks limit what you can have, which is a Consumer Protection Act, which is okay. But outside of it, we can build a lot more balanced portfolio. There's a lot of predictions, folks, of an imminent, immediate currency, U.S. dollar collapse or reset, and it's becoming a rampant theory. There's two huge threats facing the U.S. that I'm going to cover in the next half hour, okay? Two big pressures building on the U.S. The first is coming from the Federal Reserve's declining ability to fix the price of gold as the supplies are shriveling up and the market knowledge of the Fed's illegal price rigging spreads has gone rampant. People know. Second is the arrogant bullying of all these countries, Russia, China, everybody, folks. They have a new world reserve currency ready to go at any time. They've got far more than is necessary to build a new oil-backed currency. And I honestly cannot imagine a scenario where this will not be taking place in a very recent future. I believe it's the culmination of the collapse of the World Trade Centers, the Harbinger, the Mystery Babylon thing, and the ultimate fallout is going to be America paying for her sins of breaking all Ten Commandments as part of public policy. If you're interested in protecting your finances and building a quality portfolio, contact Coins Plus at 444-0044 in Spokane or through our website at coinsplus.com. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care, God bless, and please tune in to the next half hour. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus, located in Spokane, Washington, at 3201 North Division Street in the Clock Tower Building. Visit our website at coinsplus.com. You can call us locally in Spokane at 444-0044 or toll-free at 877-827-COIN. That's 877-827-2646. And remember to join us every week for True Wealth.